agenda item number three, which is the director's report. So director, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, you have a written report in there, and I'll touch on just a couple items in that report, and then I'd like to cover a few items outside of the report. First off, as was noted, we had a staff training session on wildlife conflict transformation. Occurred two or three weeks ago. Staff found it very valuable. We had 24 people involved in that, most of them with a wolf nexus. We did have one fisheries staff involved. Anyway, got some real positive feedback, and we'd like to expand that program, and we're looking for a way to provide that training for the entire executive management team over the next few months. And it was I guess transformational for several people that were involved. And so we're gonna invest some more time and effort into that training. Another wildlife item, we did have hoof disease. I don't know if you say discovered, but detected in an elk in the Skagit River drainage. This was very disappointing because it's quite a ways north of where we've had problems in the past. We're expanding our monitoring in that area, and we'll continue to look at it. Hopefully, we won't see the same kind of impacts there that we have in the south. But anyway, I think you all probably aware that we found that, so we're continuing to work on that. As you're aware, we're short some staff in our legislative liaison section, but we've been muddling through as best we can, and I think we've been doing a pretty good job. All hands are on deck, and we're responding to legislative requests as they come in. I think we're doing a good job up there. Just a couple highlights so far. This week, I was able to give a report on Washington's Wild Future program to the Senate Resources Committee. I think it went pretty well. For the most part, had some disagreements, I think, with a couple senators on a couple items, but I also got some real positive feedback from several senators on getting out and listening to people. Just a reminder, we are holding a couple more sessions. And one of them will be in South Bend, February 4th. And so if you haven't been able to make a session, that may be one that if you'd like to attend, it should be interesting. We're also going to try to hold something up at Fisherman's Terminal for an afternoon kind of session, maybe not quite as big, but trying to target more of the commercial fishermen up there. There's been several work sessions in the legislature. Of course, Commissioner Graybill mentioned a hearing on the Columbia River endorsement. We're tracking that. We have a couple of department rules requests or legislation requests ongoing. Most of those are just cleanup. We don't have a big agenda this year. I think you saw we have some requests on turkey tagging and some shellfish record keeping changes, just some minor cleanup stuff. There's been a work session on steelhead management and hatchery genetic management plans just this week, and also another work session on hoof disease. I'll have an opportunity to give an update on wildlife or wild futures to the House Resource Committee also. So we're on track with that program. We wanted to get an invite to provide feedback to the legislature this session, and we're getting those opportunities. I'll mention WAFWA. The chairman attended that meeting with me, and I think it was valuable, and I would like to maybe get a couple of additional commissioners there at the summer meeting if people are interested. This summer, the meeting's in Cody, Wyoming, and maybe we could take, I don't know, what you would think would be appropriate, but two or three commissioners. I think it's really valuable to see other states and their problems. You'll find that Washington's unique in many ways among the western states, And, you know, we have similar issues to Oregon, sometimes California, some with Alaska, but not quite the same political and social matrix as some of the Rocky Mountain states. So it's an educational experience, and I think that you would add to the conversation of in the commissioners' forums. I think it would be good for that group as well as good for us. So think about that, and we can talk about it. One thing that we're going to have this summer, I'm chairman of the Federal, State, and Tribal Committee, and we discuss those kinds of issues. And I propose that we have a session, actually in the plenary session of that meeting, to talk about tribal hunting. It is a Western issue. There's some emerging approaches to it. In fact, in Oklahoma, they have recently made some big changes in addressing statewide hunting with the Cherokee tribe, and it's had a huge impact. There's 150,000 hunters within that tribe within Oklahoma. So it's a big portion of their state. And how they're approaching it is interesting. And how other states, Montana and Arizona, are approaching working with tribes is very different than Washington. So I think it could be a very good session, and we're looking for some Washington tribal folks to be on the panel. So we have some ideas there. Now, Commissioner, I had some requests to give this update on the HGMP process, and so I'm going to ask the fisheries staff to help me with that. And I think Jim and Kelly, could you two come up? Are you doing it? Jim's going to give the first update on the HGMP progress, and so you can ask him any questions, and then Kelly's going to come up and talk about this Mitchell Act hatcheries and whatnot.
Thank you, Director Unsworth and Chair Smith. As Miranda indicated earlier, we've got a monumental task in front of us, and I am going to give you but a small glimpse of that in 5 minutes or so this morning. You may want to think about a more in-depth presentation at one of your later meetings. First, I'm going to start out by giving you a little bit of context. What is this all about? And what it's all about is that most of our salmon and steelhead in this state are listed under the Endangered Species Act. And that's true for most species in most areas. The notable exception is the Washington coast, where fortunately so far we don't have any of our salmon or steelhead listed. But for the remainder of the state, where we have listed species, there's a take prohibition in effect. And that means that basically in no way can you cause any harm to any listed species. And for our hatcheries, potentially, they could cause take under some circumstances. For example, a hatchery weir that we use to collect broodstock could delay the migration of the listed fish. That would be a take under the ESA statute. Or if a hatchery fish spawns in the wild with a listed fish, potentially there could be a loss of productivity, and again, that would be a take under the ESA. So, for our hatchery system, what we have been doing is completing what's called hatchery genetic management plans, which are a pretty comprehensive assessment of the hatchery operation, when and where the fish are released, and most importantly, how they could potentially affect these listed species. Now, it doesn't do us a lot of good, though, to just submit those to NOAA Fisheries. It's very important for NOAA and Fish and Wildlife Service in some cases to complete their review. And so why is that important? Well, first, we've invested a lot of energy in our hatchery reform initiative during the last 10 years. And by and large, we've made tremendous changes. And by and large, we now think our programs are operating consistent with conservation and recovery. But if they're not, we want to know that so that we can take whatever additional actions are necessary. And that's where this additional review by NOAA comes in helpful. Independent assessment, are our programs operating the way we would like? Now, the second really important function of the approval process is that without it, our hatcheries are subject to third-party litigation. So what that means is a third party can initiate litigation against the department alleging that we are operating inconsistent with the federal statute that prohibits take. And that's happened in a number of hatcheries across Washington so far. It's happened in Oregon, and it's happened in California. And I think we'll likely see this problem, this potential litigation, continue to increase here over the next few years unless we can get those HGMPs approved. And as I think was Miranda, Commissioner Wecker, excuse me, noted earlier, well, so what? What if litigation, what if these third parties pursue litigation? What happens? Well, the effects are potentially chaos in that the litigants can either request perhaps a elimination of the hatchery program, a temporary closure, or a substantial reduction in production. And the result of that, particularly for our coho, chinook, and steelhead fisheries, could be disaster. Most of our fisheries for those species now are dependent on hatchery production. Without it, the likelihood that we could have much of a fishery in Washington is limited, and that's equally true on the entire coast. So worst case is, in Washington, if all of our hatcheries were subject to third-party litigation and we were forced to cease our hatchery production, you know, maybe around a $2 billion loss to our salmon and steelhead fisheries, and coastwide, maybe $9-10 billion loss. So this is a significant concern to the department, our stakeholders, and the tribes. So you could ask, well, where is the department at in terms of submitting our HGMPs? And during the last 10 years and slightly more since we've had listings, department has repeatedly submitted our HGMPs. The little graphic at the bottom of the handout there shows the status of our submissions. The red bar are for listed salmon and steelhead hatcheries in Puget Sound. Blue bars are for Columbia River. And you'll see that roughly it's about 93% of our programs we have updated and refreshed the HGMPs, both in Puget Sound and statewide. So about 93% of our programs, NOAA has HGMPs waiting for the approval process. I think Lee, in his presentation earlier, mentioned that on the other side, though, NOAA has not had the staff capacity to move through that review process. So on the right side, those two bars, again, it's roughly 10%, both in Puget Sound and statewide, of the HGMPs have gone through NOAA's review process. So a real resource gap in terms of what NOAA's been able to accomplish. Now, the on the second page, you'll see a schedule chart that highlights for Puget Sound, kind of, well, what does this mean in terms of when NOAA expects to complete their ESA review? And the across the top, you've got 2015 through 2018. Down the left side, you've got different hatchery groups of HGMPs, typically watersheds. In some cases, there's a species group. The good news is that there's four green rows. NOAA's completed their ESA reviews for those. Kind of good news that there's four yellow bars indicating that the review is underway. The news that really concerns me is in the red area of that chart. Those are the HGMPs that NOAA has not yet initiated their review. And that extends through the summer of 2018. Given that third-party litigation is possible for any HGMP that has not been approved by NOAA, that presents a significant risk to the department, to the tribes, to our stakeholders' fisheries. We've been working with NOAA and our stakeholders over the last 2 or 3 years now to try and close that gap. And we're doing it in a couple ways. One is that the department has been working to make sure there's a focus on this issue. We want to make sure everybody knows what, in fact, is the task in front of us and what will happen potentially in the worst case if we're not successful. And so there's been a number of letters written to NOAA. Certainly we've talked with Will Stell, the regional administrator, and Robin Thorson, the regional director for Fish and Wildlife Service, about our concerns. Our own state senate passed a joint memorial last year urging NOAA to put more resources to this problem. I think to a significant extent, those have had some positive benefits. During the last year, NOAA has added approximately six staff, or in the process of adding six staff, to engage on this issue and expedite the processing of the HGMPs. We've also been working with our congressional delegation to secure additional funds for NOAA. And we were partially successful last year in that the House had some language in it that provided additional $4 million to NOAA and some language directing them to use that to expedite the completion of HGMPs. Unfortunately, in the final budget bill, the reconciliation with the Senate, the language urging the prioritization of the HGMPs stayed, but the $4 million to accompany it, as far as I can understand, did not. So where do we go from here? I think the critical thing, again, is to keep focus on NOAA, on keeping this, forcing NOAA's attention to it, making sure that they're aware of the importance of it. And second, getting them additional resources to bring to bear on the problem. And we're looking at both the federal level, again, as a potential source. And as Lee mentioned earlier, we had a meeting with the governor's office about 2 weeks ago now, where we also talked with the governor about a potential state match, where we would ask the legislature for some funding, again, to help move this forward. And that could help us, I think, in the short term, perhaps more than a federal appropriation. The federal appropriation, we're probably at least a year out, maybe more, before NOAA could put that on the ground in terms of additional resources. So that, in a nutshell, is a glimpse at the monumental issue that Commissioner Wecker put on the table, certainly one we're keeping a very close eye on.
Commissioner Thornburg? really still struggling to get my head around this monumental issue, so I've got a couple of questions that I think are pretty basic. Don't we have listed runs in the snake? And so where is the toucan hatchery in this hatchery complex in this
Table on the or the graphic on the front is statewide, and there's listed species in the Snake River. Off the top of my head, I can't remember if the toucanin HGMP has been approved. I know the program on the Snake River has been approved, but whether the toucanin is or not, I need to check. Ellie, you might have that talk your head.
And then I have a second, even more basic question. Do HGMPs also apply to hatcheries that are not raising listed fish? So a hatchery that's dealing strictly with trout?
It could. The reason to get a NOAA's review and approval of an HGMP is if that species potentially causes take of listed fish. So many of our trout hatcheries, we release the trout only into lakes where there's no listed species, and so there'd be no reason, probably, to worry about take. Therefore, an HGMP would not be needed.
Thank you.
Yep. Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim, I like others up here, feel like this is a very serious, almost non-moving process. So it's probably not fair to ask you this today, but and if we can't answer today, I'd like to get an answer in February. $4 million is a pretty good chunk of change, and we're looking for a half a dozen people or a dozen people to be able to process. Could we get a report on, maybe not from you, but maybe from the feds, on whether $4 million is used for? And are we getting any bang for the buck on that, or is it just money going away and effort not happening? I mean, it borders on. I won't use the term.
Yeah. Commissioner Carpenter, a couple thoughts for you there. One, I would like to emphasize that the staff that NOAA Fisheries has working on this now are excellent staff. They're tremendous people. They're working hard. The fact is, they've got, you know, somewhere in Washington, somewhere around 150 of these 100-page documents that need to be reviewed. It's a large and complex task, and the staff resources that NOAA currently has are insufficient to get through it in a timely way. So I don't in any way want to leave you with an impression that the staff at NOAA aren't working hard. They are. The six additional staff, they are been coming on during the last year, and more will be on board. I think it's by February of this year. I think they'll continue to accelerate this process, but we've got to do more. And I think it would be very helpful from my perspective if we in fact did ask our federal partners to come in and provide the commission with their assessment and their assessment of what could be done to accelerate it.
Please do so.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Mackin.
Yeah, this is a basic question too, but I've just been thinking about it since Lee's presentation and your presentation. I've read some HGMPs. They're good sleeping pills, I can tell you. The 100 pages of detail on the science and the process of running hatcheries, I recognize the importance of that. Once these HGMPs are completed for say 8 or 10 hatcheries, and you come back on a periodic basis to review them again, to what extent do they change normally in a period of, say, a couple of 3 years? Are they going to be the same difficulty? You're going to have the same difficulty in processing them? Or is it going to be simpler the second, third, and fourth time around?
My belief, and it is a belief because we don't have much experience with this, that it will be a lot simpler the next time through. And that's because Most of our populations, our ESA-listed populations, are relatively stable, if not increasing in abundance. And our understanding of our hatchery programs and their potential effects on listed species is now pretty good. So once we get through this first round, I don't anticipate large changes, the next time through. There could be circumstances where a wild population takes a downturn, for example, and we'll have to reevaluate the program and potentially reduce production or take other measures to reduce risks. But in general, my initial thought is it should be a lot easier the next time through.
Okay. Commissioner Kenney.
Kind of along the same lines as Commissioner Mencken, when I look at the green, obviously those are approved. There was either the hatcheries are still operating or there was some changes made, but they've gone through the process. And I just wonder if there's, we're focused on the shortcomings of NOAA to get the rest done and trying to push money in there. Is there any kind of judicial or legal approach that could be taken to, say, stay the course? We're working on it, and because of the billions of dollars at stake, where we could go in through a legal process where we're unsuable for a while based on a higher determination by the courts, because the results are going to be, according to what we've done so far, some minor adjustments. And maybe they have a cost associated with them that could be made up at a later date. But it seems like we're trying to push to get it all done, and that's good. But are the effects of the results of the EISs really going to change enough to cause the billions of dollars of damage that if they're not done? Hear what I'm kind of heading at?
That's a little bit speculative on the legal side, which I'm not an expert on, but I'll give you my uninformed perspective. How's that?
Okay.
I think that argument's going to be tested in court pretty darn soon. And what obviously the best case is that we've got a HGMP that's approved. It's got the full NEPA process behind it. We've got all our bows tied tight. I think there'll still be litigation over those programs, but I'm feeling we're in a good spot. The second place we could find ourselves in is where NOAA has issued a letter of sufficiency, which basically means they have the information to make a decision, and based on their initial assessment, they think the program is likely consistent with the requirements of the Endangered Species Act. So the second best case is where we have a letter of sufficiency and a NEPA process has been completed. And I think that one's going to hit the court pretty soon probably, and we will make that very argument that we are on a path to securing no approval. The programs appear to be consistent with ESA requirements. Judge, why would you order something different given that we're on that path? So we'll see how that plays out in court.
Sure.
Just for a real good point of clarification, you've given this. It's all right for us to share this?
Certainly.
Because there again, having read some things that's transpired lately, I was very, very concerned. And I was talking with one of our local writers in our local paper, and he kind of brushed it off. And I go, up until about a year or two ago, I'd have done the same. But after what transpired in Puget Sound, I pressed the panic button. And to me, this back chart does a really good job of conveying the importance and what is truly a play. And there again, we keep talking about money. Larry is absolutely right. We don't want to just pour more money down a rat hole just to do it. But what's truly at play in this state, I mean, it's about like Francine. In the long run, it might be some money damn well spent.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Mr. Rucker.
I'll be quick because I know we're behind schedule. But Lee Blankenship brought up the prioritization question. So who did the prioritization for this schedule?
Yeah, so I'll speak to that. The prioritization was done probably 2 years ago now, and I'm not sure whether the Lummi Tribe, for example, was on the call. There was a call with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and all the tribes were certainly invited. And the discussion that ensued was, let's move forward with those that are ready to go. And that's what you see in NOAA's tracking table, which I have a copy of here. So, for example, at that time, there was litigation ongoing on the ELWA. Well, there still is, but that was our highest priority, make sure we move through the ELWA. Next below that was the Dungeness, because it was completed and ready for NOAA's review. And then on down the list of watersheds. Now, what's happened since that time is, in some cases, watersheds have moved forward more rapidly than we anticipated, and some haven't moved forward as rapidly as we would have liked. So I think the idea to revisit this prioritization is a good one. It's been 2 years, and as a, you know, as a department, we certainly support moving forward with those that are ready for NOAA's review. There's no reason for NOAA to sit and wait for one further down the list that's not ready.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen. Director, did you want to?
Kelly was.
So very briefly, I'll try to get us back on track. As Commissioner Wecker mentioned, we've got a hot off the press, brand new 60-day notice of intent to sue filed by Wild Fish Conservancy alleging violations under the Endangered Species Act committed by the Department of Commerce and NOAA Fisheries. What I'll do is just tell you what we've done to date, actions we've taken, and maybe a path forward as far as monitoring. So upon hearing about this last Thursday, we decided we needed to get in front of this to the extent possible. We moved to schedule meetings with key legislators. We conducted those meetings on Monday. We developed a briefing paper in prior to those meetings. We passed that out and distributed it to the members of the Fish Committee. I have copies that I'll leave with Tammy for folks that are interested in seeing that. In a nutshell, and to Commissioner Wecker's point, the importance of these fisheries to local economies is not just local economies. I mean, coastwide is pretty substantial. It's over $53 million in economic benefit on an annual basis. The other thing I'll say is with respect to the Mitchell Act programs, the WDF programs that are funded by Mitchell Act. We have 25 of them, and unlike Puget Sound, we feel a little bit better about where we are in the process. Of the 25 programs, 14 of them have letters of sufficiency from NOAA and are on well down the road to consultation. The remaining 11, we're in the early consultation phase. We do not have official letters of sufficiency, but we've been in conversations with NOAA Fisheries on those, so we feel a lot better about that. And again, I'll leave the briefing document with Tammy, and it's got some impacts to fisheries and to local economies that may be of interest to you. So.
Pertaining to the Mitchell Act, is that money in one geographic area more than the other or not?
Yeah, it's Lower Columbia primarily. Oh, exclusively.
Just specifically to the Lower Columbia?
Well, we do have Mitchell Act funding, for example, up at Ringgold. We have our Ringgold steelhead production is funded by Mitchell Act, so I would say Ringgold downstream.
Okay. Does Idaho and Oregon get some of this money?
Oregon does. The tribes do.
Uh-huh.
I'm not 100% sure about Idaho. I don't think they do. They do. So, okay.
Mr. Werfer.
Okay. Thank you.
One more quick question. On the early winter steelhead, HGMP, you're looking at a spring 2016 completion of NOAA's review. Where does that leave us, as far as you know, in terms of releasing steelhead for this year?
Want to take that one, Kelly?
Sure. So I'll back up. I think it was about 3 weeks ago we had a conference call with NOAA Fisheries and with co-managers, a status update. We do this routinely, you know, trying to make sure that they're on track, and if there are bumps in the road, you know, being advised of those in advance. Couple of things going on. There's the work NOAA's doing on the HGMPs, but then there's also the bull trout biological opinions that it's a consultation between NOAA Fisheries and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They were also on this most recent call, and what we heard from them was we're on track to be able to release, to get the work done, get the requisite coverage, and release fish early May. That was before the 60-day notice of intent to file, so I think the question is out there, and we should probably ask this of our federal partners, what, if any, effect is this going to have on those early winter programs?
Because I think that would be one of those opportunities for prioritization that we ought to look at. Extremely high priority, I think, to us.
Any other question? Just a curiosity question. In the Wild Fish Conservancy's suits in the past or this one, do you know if there have been other friend of the court briefs on their behalf, or are these all solo players?
I don't know. Jim, do you?
There have been different organizations involved in some of the litigation. For example, ELWA. There was three or four other organizations joined with Wild Fish Conservancy.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Commissioner.
On that point, Chairman, for example, the Leavenworth Hatchery is under fire for, I think, the third time. And I should just comment that their legal department is finding a way to legitimately file a suit based on this process. In the case of the Leavenworth Hatchery, it's a water quality issue. So they're finding different ways to attack the hatchery system, and we're getting it from a lot of different fronts.
Commissioner Graybill's comment reminds me, because I, as I was leaving, was reading in the Spokesman Review about a water quality issue that's just come up with the Spokane Hatchery. They've been forever working on TMDLs, on PCBs in the Spokane River, and now the hatchery's being identified as a point source that we've been looking at the Little Spokane for a really long time. Any comments on that I can carry home?
So this is specifically PCPs is the new issue. I think the news article came out yesterday or the day before. So we've got a fire lighted under staff and our water quality folks in the agency who are looking into that very closely and trying to provide some responses to the governor's office and others who have asked. And I don't have any other information for you other than that right now, but happy to keep you informed as developments occur.
I would appreciate it because it's a coalition of interesting foes. So,
yes.
Where would the PCBs come from?
Fish food.
The fish food.
Fish food.
Yeah.
Yes.
Happy to keep you informed as that develops. Yes.
And the plot thickens.
Thank you.
Director, want to continue on?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a couple more items, and this was had so much interest. I'll follow the Commissioner Carpenter's suggestion, and maybe we'll tee this up for the next few meetings to have as a regular agenda item. I certainly found that report useful. I have one final report that I need to read to you. It's actually in your packet. It's just above the tab 4 tab, but I need to read this as part of this settlement. The Commission's June 15 General Delegation of Authority directs me to advise you when I approve a litigation settlement valued at more than $50,000. I'm writing to let you know that I have approved an agreement between the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and Alex and Matthew Tarabakia to settle the Tarabakia's 2010 federal lawsuit against employees of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Enforcement Program for a payment of $130,000. The case focused on a traffic stop in March 27
2007 on a public highway near Skamakia by WDFW officers in order to inspect the Tarabaki's commercial catch and fishing records. The trial court dismissed the lawsuit in 2011, but the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals reinstated it in 2014. In addition, under the terms of the settlement agreement, I state on behalf of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that WDFW violated the constitutional rights of Alex and Matthew Tarabakia. We have settled with the Tarabakias, agreeing to pay them $130,000. We are pleased that the suit has been resolved, and our enforcement program has revised operations to ensure that issues like this don't reoccur.
Mr. Chair.
Counselor, did you want to?
I didn't want to preempt your question, but I was just going to say if there were questions, you know, I could talk to people about it later at a break. So.
Okay. The only thing I was going to say is that I've been given information about this case, admittedly not in depth, but I just want to share with the rest of the commission that you may want to look into this a little more to satisfy any questions you might have about the circumstances, what our officers did, the issues that were presented by the Tarabakias. I really encourage you to understand more fully what took place here, because it sounds pretty bad from the vantage point of that we agreed to a fairly large settlement. My view is that the Ninth Circuit was incorrect in its decision to overturn the district court level. But sometimes wisdom compels you to settle, even if you still feel like you were in the right. I can't speak to many of the details except to just encourage you, if you're so inclined, to get a more full briefing on what happened, because this would, on its face, create some concerns. Is our enforcement program routinely violating constitutional rights? And I think it is incumbent on us to make sure that our enforcement program conduct is appropriate. So just wanted to encourage you, if you have any questions, you want a briefing on the subject, I think it would surprise you at what you'd find.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. I happened to come upon this case kind of by accident. You know, occasionally I review in my other job, I review Ninth Circuit opinions, and this one caught my attention when I saw that. And I did read the opinion, and it is published. It's available if people are interested. I think we could get the citation, and people could read the recitation of the facts. I don't know if I necessarily disagree, and this is not an area of my expertise, but I will say that the Ninth Circuit did some kind of legal gymnastics, I think, to get to its determination. It's a complex area of the law. You know, ordinarily there's deference given to law enforcement to do their duty, and there are narrow exceptions to where the enforcement agency can be found civilly liable. This was a civil lawsuit, and really what this $130,000, what happens when you are successful in these Section 1983 lawsuits is that you're entitled to your attorney's fees. And so, you know, given that this went through the trial court and to the Ninth Circuit, I mean, that's a heavy burden and very difficult to really challenge. So, and I don't know the details, but I'm just kind of reading this opinion. But so I just thought I'd offer that. But if you are interested, it's another perhaps insomnia pill.
Right.
There is a detailed recitation of the facts in the Ninth Circuit's opinion.
Thank you. Any other comments from commissioners? No. Director, does that bring to a closure?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.